About 8 years ago, there was a woman driving a 1950s Ford pickup truck, beautiful candy apple red, and she had beautiful red hair to match. I was with my buddy Gabe in his pickup truck in the passenger seat, and this woman, probably 20 years old, beautiful pale skin, beautifully built, perfectly symmetrical face, and this great red hair, rolls up and her windows are down, and I say, "You're gorgeous. Can I have your number?" And she says, "Yeah, you can." And I'm sitting there and I'm like, "Excellent." And so she starts saying it. She's like, 715-777. And then my buddy in the driver's seat says, "Do the curtains match the shutters?" And she drives away. And I was just about to connect with a stranger in the deepest and most legitimate way. There was kind of right when we locked eyes at that light, we matched up, and then I proceeded to just smack my buddy Gabe in the face for about 20 minutes after that, knowing that he just shattered my dreams and hopes.
How did Gabe feel about it?
Oh, he was very comfortable, and he was slightly apologetic after about 3 or 4 hours of me lambasting him about this. But it was screwed up, because there really was a connection. Like, I can still see her beautiful blue eyes and her pale skin and her freckles and her beautiful red hair and this beautiful pickup truck. She clearly came from money. Not only was she from money, but she also was perfect. And the fact that I never got connected, I feel like that set my life on this trajectory where I am just literally drinking booze and talking about fairy tales rather than having a beautiful family and a beautiful wife. And so my life is second class now because of Gabe.
So close and so far. Mm-hmm.
My name is Malaku, and you're listening to Fairly Odd Fairy Tales, guys. And that one, unfortunately, was not a fairy tale. That was a real life event by a good buddy of mine, longtime friend, second time visitor on the podcast, J-Roll, Bedanky Stank, whatever you call yourself. What up?
Muffaletta Bread is my preferred.
Now, is that like a stage persona or a rap persona? Is it like your fucking, your book name when you write books?
I was gifted that name at a burn, and I was gifted it from myself in an altered state.
Okay.
When I realized that I was covered in Asiago cheese and toasted under the sun.
I feel that, actually. Muffaletta Bread makes a lot of sense. Is that really where it came from?
Yeah.
That's dope.
What's your name? Yeah! Muffaletta Bread? What you think?
Dude, acid's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, maybe it was.
And now we also got with us our fucking OG of the century, cameraman and porn director extraordinaire, Juski. What a doozy. Oh, that's pretty gangster. And also, I want to say a big thank you to the Helios Network for putting this all together. I think we could all collectively agree that, you know, we're taking over the ship. Owen has abandoned us. He jumped. And I think we're good, though. I think we could do this. I think we got everything under control. I don't think anything's going to catch on fire. So if we can get through this without anything catching on fire, I think we're going to fire Owen.
Nothing but this conversation.
Hey. All right. Owen's fired. Let's move on. Tonight, we're drinking gin and tonics. Everybody hold up your glass real quick. We do a little cheers for the camera. God, we're such nationalettes, dude. Mm. Now, this gin we're going to be drinking is actually a gin called, what was it called again? McQueen and the Violet Fog.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Wiz Khalifa, baby.
Oh, really? That's Wiz Khalifa's brand?
Yeah, which is pretty crazy.
Oh, wow. How do you like it?
Personally, there's a lot of bright orange, like the literal fruit orange notes.
Yeah. Pass me that bottle.
Yeah. Go take a look at it. Take a sip of it, too.
Take a sip straight up. See what's up.
It's actually really nice. And I think this elderflower fever tree tonic is pretty banging. If you drink a tonic, probably only drink fever tree because everything else is bullshit, right? Great, right?
Well, I just wonder who makes it.
Wiz Khalifa himself.
I know, dude. But I mean, like, it's so funny. Like, I toured a Tennessee whiskey factory this last weekend, and they were like, they've been a company for 3 years, and they just got these huge awards for their 14-year-old whiskey. And I asked the tour guide, I was like, "Hey, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist here, but you just won a bunch of awards, and you've only for a 14-year-old whiskey, and you've only been a company for 3 years. How is that possible?" And they say, because it's blended. It's blended in a unique way. I was like, well, it's not really your recipe. You didn't grind the corn. You didn't make the mash. You didn't even build the contract a person to build the barrel. Someone else did all of this work. You know, you just have a supplier making all your whiskey. Are they not upset that essentially, you know, you're getting all the awards for their hard work? And they say, no. It's their recipe. It's their recipe, and we never got to the bottom of it.
But. Well, actually, if you want to get to the bottom of it, Owen explained this to us one time. I don't know if he did it like a few weeks ago on a podcast or just in person, but he was saying that what happens is it's really hard to get investors to pay money to make your alcohol. So what usually happens is they'll start brewing this alcohol that takes like 14 years, but in the first 4 years of operation, they'll just make their label and stick it on a bottle and fill it with somebody else's alcohol.
Right.
And this is just the standard practice. And they sell that until their alcohol is ready to be sold and bottled.
Was so, this not like on an episode of Oblongs at one time? I could have swore because they were like bottling a different drink, but in a different type of bottle. And I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the show, but it sounds literally just like that. But they were getting remnants of like the old stuff that was in the old bottle. And so they were getting so many customers, but it turns out the old bottles they were using were like from a hospital and it had morphine in it. So that's why everybody was all over. But
what is this? Holy shit.
You ever seen the Oblongs?
No.
It's like an old cartoon. It used to be on Adult Swim way back in the day.
No. And I actually.
Oh, so this is a fictional story.
Yeah.
Okay. Life isn't that cool.
Okay. I want to watch this. I've never seen this. Have you ever watched C-Lab 2021? Great show.
Come on.
Great fucking show, dude. Yeah. All right, though, but this ain't about that. This is actually about Jack and the Beanstalk. If you guys were listening last week, you know that we ended right before the third time Jack re-enters the Giants' house. So I think what we should do first is let's do a quick little recap.
Yeah, give us a 2-minute reminder of where we are.
Yeah, so what happened is Jack's a little trifling little hoe, and his mom is working hard for everybody, and his dad's a piece of shit who's sick. And so then their cow stops making milk, and that's the only way they made money, so they had to sell their cow. But Jack's dumbass gets swindled, and he sells it for beans, and his mom gets really mad. Now, in Jack's defense, he thought they were magic beans, and he was right, and apparently they're only activated by his hunger. So he gets these beans, they're thrown out the window, creates a beanstalk, he climbs it, meets this wonderful lady who makes food and is a giant's wife, and he swindles her twice. And he's like, hey, let me have some food, and she's like, all right, and then he fucking robs her because the giant comes in and then is like, fee, fi, fo, fum, I want to eat a child. And he hides, gets out, robs the giant, goes back home with the riches. No, just to put us into perspective of this third time, what happens is the first time he steals was it the hen? No, I don't think it was the hen.
No, first time he steals gold. Do you mind if I add to this real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
So Jack trades the cow for beans.
Yes.
He gets his butt kicked by his parents. By mom particularly. He goes to bed hungry, throws the beans out the window, okay? Next morning he wakes up, there's a giant beanstalk. Jack climbs up that beanstalk, runs in to the wife while the husband's out. The husband's coming. He goes into the oven and steals gold when he sneaks out of the oven once the giant goes to sleep. Goes back down, gives the money to his mother. Next time, goes to sleep hungry, goes back up the beanstalk.
And this is because they ran out of the gold, the amount that he originally stole. So that's why he's hungry again.
Right. They burn through that money pretty quickly. Yeah. Okay.
Not at all.
Then he goes back up the beanstalk when he needs more dough, right? And he gets up there, sees the same woman, same house, same situation, talks about how, well, if you gave me some food, I would be fat enough for your husband to actually enjoy me.
That was the first time. So what happened the second time this goes on is she's like, hey, you look familiar. Last time I saw a boy like you, we got robbed. Was it you? And he goes, I don't know, but if you feed me, I could probably tell you. And she's like, all right, fuck it. And she feeds him. No.
Right.
Yeah. It's also, though, here's the thing. White people look the same. And I'm sorry, but somebody had to say it. Y'all look the same. You guys could not tell you apart.
No, it'd be impossible. I get that.
Oh, yeah. Owen, the only reason why I know who Owen is because he's black and bald. Only defining characteristics about him.
Right.
Yes.
So he, second time, goes up, hides in the oven again.
Again.
Ends up with the golden goose who shits gold eggs.
Yes.
Grabs the goose, maybe a dove. Was it a goose?
It was a hen.
It's a hen.
Yes.
H-E-N, hen.
I wasn't going to take that away from you, buddy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Goes back down the beanstalk with the hen. It starts shitting eggs. I guess what happens?
What happens is that this little motherfucker gets greedy. I hate this piece of shit. He gets greedy, and so he literally starves himself on purpose in the hopes that another beanstalk will grow, and goes to sleep hungry, even though they got plenty of money. Mm. And beanstalk grows. So he goes the third time. Now, this is where we left off. So okay. We're ready to dive right in?
We're in. Yeah, I think so.
Let's do it. So this time he knows that it's not going to work trying to trick the lady. So he actually hides outside for a minute. And when he realizes, like, none of the giants are in there, he sneaks into, bing, bing, boom, bam, boom, copper pot motherfuckers.
That's right.
Because he knows they're going to check the oven if they smell him. And giants have a particular great sense of smell. They're like dogs, right? They can smell really good. They eat goats, and they're not really smart. Mm. And they also count their money like fucking bourgeoisie pieces of shit. Yeah.
For sure.
I hope this little girl sitting outside can't hear me just going on and on, because that would be so bad.
So Jack is in the pot. He's in the house for the third time, but he's in the pot for the first time.
And he's hiding, and the pot isn't as air sealed.
So does anybody know he's there?
No. No, okay. No, no. He waited till everybody left. So wow. He's hiding.
So what is his plan this time? What is he going after?
He doesn't know. He's just like, I'm going to fucking wing it. And whenever this giant goes to sleep, I'm going to find some shit and steal it, because okay. I'm that nigga. So he hides in the copper pot, but his scent isn't that covered. Not like, and we talked about the clay ovens a lot last week, or the just nature of the ovens being airtight. And so the giant could kind of smell it, but he couldn't tell what it was. And why that's important, and the airtight nature of the oven, is this copper pot isn't as airtight. So when the giants come home, they're both like, I know I smelled this motherfucker, like both of them. And right. They're just like, dude, fucking, they're just like, if he's here, he's in the fucking oven. And they check the oven, he's not there. So then the wife goes, we're on some dumb shit right now. We clearly ate a boy last week. We're both tripping. We need to stop eating so much acid. Let's just cook our dinner and go to sleep. Like, we're fucking flipping out. So they do that. But the giant, the whole time, because the scent is so strong, he's like, dude, I know this motherfucker's in my house. It's like some classic R. Kelly trapped in the closet shit. Like, you know a nigga's in your closet. You just don't know which closet. And so he would do this thing where he would just, like, surprise and open the cupboards. And Jack is just watching from the copper pot the whole time, shitting himself. And the giant would do it almost like a joke after a while. Like, he would just, like, do giant shit, whatever they do in a kitchen. And then psych! And, like, open the cupboard. And so, dude, poor Jack was tired, and he's just sitting in there just staring, trying to stay awake, freaking out. He's about to get caught. And after like 2 hours of this, the giant's like, all right, I feel pretty good about this. I'm going to go sit down and chill for a minute.
This is actually written into the fairy tale, this whole thing about him kind of
watching like the giant. Cupboards. Yeah, yeah, and doing the
What else is mentioned in the actual story?
What's mentioned directly is that he, from the copper pot, watches as the giant goes about his day, but the giant doesn't trust that he's not there because he can still smell it pretty strongly. So he just like keeps checking cupboards, random cupboards all around the kitchen, and he does it like on a whim. Like, the giant will be doing something and then just jumps for a cupboard because he's trying to catch someone sneaking in the act. Wow. That's the giant's mind.
Okay.
So, and this is, I want to bring this up. Paranoia is an interesting thing, right? And I learned something from this particular point. Paranoia is only paranoia unless you find the person. Then it's no longer paranoia. It's just somebody who's prepared. And that's a weird concept, because like, what if every time you were paranoid, you weren't. There is something there. You just didn't find it.
How do you like this? Preparanoia.
Fuck, that would be a great like 2001 metal band.
For sure.
But not metal band. Maybe a metal band with a chick singer, kind of like Evanescence, Preparanoia.
Oh, yeah. And you can almost see it used in a modern context for the preppers. It's like, hey, no, I'm not paranoid. I'm preparanoid.
Yo, we should sell that to preppers. Can we be pickers and preppers?
Yeah, we could. Oh, they go together.
They really do, actually. Yeah. The only difference between a picker and a prepper is the selling.
And a little background here while Malaku makes his beverage is I have a picking company called Nashville's Pickers Juniors. It's largely fictitious. He has a
even company. Larger fictitious company.
Well, not larger. We're acquiring you, not vice versa. That's my understanding.
No, this is a fucking merger. What are you talking about, bro? Fuck you.
No, dude. But there's always a big daddy in the merger, and we're definitely the big daddy in this merger. And this is all part of our cosplay fantasy of being just like Mike and the other dude and Pickers, you know, that show?
American Pickers.
Oh, yeah. We want to be like those guys.
I am not Chumley. Who doesn't, though? I just want to throw this out there.
I have an eye for that, you know, that keen eye that can just point things out, that just knows where to go, how to get through it, how to get it, you know?
Totally. And Malaku doesn't accept one thing. I know this is kind of separate from being a picker, but
fuck you,
he was
Josh.
Labeled as being Chumley if we were going to have like a pawn shop for all of our picks. And he's kind of offended by that label.
This like the funniest guy.
No. This is like when everybody tried to convince me that I'm not the Avatar and I'm Appa. I know what you guys are doing. Don't undermine me. Fuck all of you guys. I'm the Avatar and I'm not Chun-Li. I am.
I would see more as like the Avatar's just friend that was originally the enemy that just kind of turned good, had that character development, and then just, you know, became the best friend. Not quite the Avatar, but he's like right there.
Yo, totally. If you're saying Julian is the Avatar, I'll literally fucking end this show right now. This show will stop forever. I swear to God, someone say something like
that. All right, let's get right back to the
That's
pot.
What I fucking thought, guys. I'm the Avatar, because only the
Chumley,
Avatar.
Chumley, pick up where we left off.
I like the... You know, we forgot the tonic. That's the real issue. That's why I'm off track. So anyways, motherfucker, he goes to the fucking copper pot. He's hiding, and this giant... is sitting in his couch, and rich people just do shit sometimes that's so condescending without like them knowing that they're being condescending. Like, this motherfucker just sits there and he pulls out his harp and he goes, "Harp, sing to me." And he just sits there and listens to his harp singing to him. And it doesn't say that he does this, but I know he does this. He just sits back and goes, "God, I'm so fucking rich. It feels so goddamn good." Ugh. And he does that for like 30 minutes till he passes out. He's just like, "Ugh, I'm so rich."
So the harp makes the giant go to sleep. He and his wife are both sleeping now.
Yes. And so in this narration specifically, the harp is a snitch ass hoe. So what happens is Jack gets out of the copper pot and he goes, "Fuck it, I'm taking the harp, dude." And he grabs the harp, and the harp goes, "Master, master, someone's trying to run off with me." And the giant wakes up and is like, "Who's in my house?" And Jack, another evidence that Jack is black, he outruns a giant. And he's fucking sprinting, and the giant's chasing, and is close, but not that close. And keep in mind, I did talk some shit about how they never say the giant's height. We found out that they do. The giant's like, what, 20 feet tall or some shit? That means each one of his steps is theoretically, if what's his name, is like 5'6", four times the step of the average runner. Mm. Now, I don't know if him being heavier actually makes it harder to run because he's so much larger. This is a science for like an athlete analyst. I don't have this information. But I assume... if they can run at the same rate and he can do four times as many steps and Jack is still ahead of him, that this motherfucker is D1 material and we need to sign him to Bama.
Well, it's like when you're like chasing a mouse in your house, you know what I mean? It's just like screaming everywhere. It's going fast. You're a big person. You're getting through like furniture. You're like, "Oh, where's it?" You know?
I don't chase mice in my house. I pick up stray cats and I use them for like a week and then back out.
Tom and Jerry. Classic Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, it's like an orphanage for Tom and Jerry's. A really bad orphanage. Daddy drinks. And so this fucking giant is chasing him. And this is another specific detail. When they start climbing down the beanstalk, or
they're both now going down the beanstalk.
Yeah, they get to the beanstalk. Okay. So we're getting to the point where they're getting to the beanstalk and Jack starts climbing down. The harp in this version has hands and like a body, like on the front of it. And these, I don't think it has legs, but it has arms for sure. And it's like grabbing onto a beanstalk. One of the like stalks trying to make sure it doesn't go down anymore, and Jack is like fighting it to get it down, and so I thought this was super weird.
This sounds like kidnapping now.
It is. It's thievery. No, Jack is. I don't think you guys understand. And this is
kidnapping
probably
is worse than thievery. At one point, you're stealing an object. Now you're stealing
a life. This is kidnapping. Is it kidnapping if they're an adult? True question.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's what they call it, the court.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I think it's still kidnapping.
Interesting.
I don't think the kid in kidnapping has anything to do with kids. And I don't know what it actually means, and I would love to find out what it actually means, but it's my understanding that the kid in kidnapping does not relate.
That actually would make a lot of sense, too, because the nap and napping, which is the other half of the word, has nothing to do with the action either. So,
okay, so he's kidnapping this harp. So this is a object with arms and a mouth and the ability to have like its own
conscious
thoughts.
Ideas. And well, I mean, yeah, I guess. But it's heavily imprinted on the giant, and it's like it calls it its master. Like right. It thinks it belongs to him. And I'm pretty sure it's this one, but I'm pretty sure Jack just fucking grabs the harp, rips it off the thing, and then throws it down to the ground like a savage. And he starts like climbing down. So they're still kind of close to the top. Now the giant gets on the beanstalk. And as the giant's climbing down, his weight is swaying this beanstalk. And that's going to be important. So Jack keeps climbing down. And I think even the story kind of acknowledged the irony of what's about to happen. Jack's climbing down and goes, "Mama, mama, bring the axe." And just luckily enough, his mom was out in the yard chopping wood. And it even says something like, yeah, how fortunate is it that Jack's mother was chopping wood in the yard when this was happening? Yeah, how convenient. And, so he runs down and his mom runs up to him with the axe and the giant is like fucking climb down. He's like, "I'm going to eat you." And Jack just fucking yeet cuts this goddamn beanstalk down. And the giant's weight while this is swaying tears the cuts even deeper. So it's quick. It's a quick thing. After about, I think it's like two or three heavy swings, the weight of the giant tears the beanstalk down. It falls. He dies. The harp just starts singing in joy. So I'm wondering if by killing the giant, he has become the new master, like to this harp's understanding.
Hold up. Did you just jump to the giant died?
The giant, yeah. He cut the beanstalk and the beanstalk fell.
Yeah, bro. Wait. So he starts chopping away at the base of the beanstalk.
Yeah.
And the beanstalk is starting to fall because he's still, what, halfway up?
Bro, I don't think you understand. From this moment,
how close was he to the bottom by the time the beanstalk fell? How far ahead was he?
Dude, I don't know, dude. He's 20 feet, but this beanstalk also goes to fucking heaven. So, like, I could not tell you how tall or how long this process was. But what I can tell you is it is equally anticlimactic when you read it because it's literally him being chased down the beanstalk and throwing the harp. To the giant dying and the harp singing is maybe 1/20th of the rest of this story. It's literally you get to that point and then it's two sentences. The harp starts singing, they live happily ever after, and Jack becomes a functional member. They say like a useful member to society and to his family after this experience. That's
wait,
it.
Those are the actual words they use?
Yeah, he used a useful. It's either useful or like a beneficial. It's one of those words. Member of society. So, and this is why.
He kills someone and becomes a productive member of society.
I don't think you understand the nature of the Jack stories, which we talked about in the last episode. Jack is supposed to be a trickster. And I think this is why Henry Talbert's version was immediately like written off, is because there was a morality thing there where like Jack is in the moral high ground, and in no other Jack story, including the oral versions most people heard, there was never that. Jack is the trickster. But the thing is, after he goes through this intense adventure, he matures from it and he no longer has the desires to be. I don't know if you remember from the beginning of the first episode, we talk about how Jack wants to work, but he keeps getting lost in the skies. His mom, but he keeps getting distracted. Very ADHD boy looking into the skies. But after this adventure, he has like fulfilled that desire to explore. And so now he's no longer a curious boy. He's a hardworking man.
Right. Closing the loop on the coming of age theme that we kind of talked about in the first episode, which is this whole thing about him taking over the project of selling the cow, getting the beans. That was kind of, this is like the beginning of his, that was the beginning of his coming of age. Now killing the giant sounds like he's concluded that chapter.
It's all done now. The bad guy is out. He has all of the riches. He has a rich that not only provides him actual financial joy, which is the hen that's always laying eggs, but he has this gold harp, this thing that's purely aesthetic. What a net worth. How much is that harp worth, dude? It's a harp that fucking sings. It's a sentient. Is it though?
I mean,
it's nothing is priceless.
Nothing's priceless. Well, that's true. But if I give you $17 and you need $17 and you take it for that hen, now that hen, for whatever reason, is worth $17. The same way, I think it was 20,000 Bitcoin. The first Bitcoin transfer was for two Domino's pizzas. And in that moment, that was the first transaction of Bitcoin trading was for Domino's Pizza. Somebody on a random blog was like, I'll send someone Bitcoin if they order me two Domino's pizzas. So that was the first time there was a transaction.
The marketplace for singing and speaking harps had yet to be established at that point.
So and I don't think it will ever after that, right? How many of these could there be?
Right.
Does the harp have a family, maybe?
These are the questions no one asked. Does the harp have a family? Where did he get this harp? So actually, in the Henry Talbert version, the harp, the hen, and the bag of gold, these were all things that belonged to Jack's father. And a fairy comes and tells this to Jack. So Jack is just taking back what's rightfully theirs. That's how they...
Wait, you're saying that these items were originally his father?
In the moralized version. In the version where they had to give it like a ethical background for Jack to do all this hood rat shit.
What a backstory.
Well, that's only in that... That's why that one was never accepted. Is because everyone's like, no, it wasn't him trying to do that. He's Jack. Jack the trickster. That's his archetype.
This live iteration of this. I want to see this. And I want to see every part of the story become to fruition.
What are you fucking talking about? What do you think the point of this episode is?
And Lachlan, I got a back to earth question. Yeah. Is there any version of events where you can just play like a chorus from your song, Bruce Almighty, while I quickly use the restroom?
Where's that camera at?
We're actually coming up on the...
first 30-minute mark?
Yeah, we got a little over a minute and 40 seconds.
Okay. What,
you think you can spitball for a minute 40?
I can spitball for a minute 40.
All right, so real quick in that minute 40, what we're going to do when we come back from this brief little, whatever you want to call it, pause, is we're going to talk about the original... I found a PDF of the 1734 edition. It's in this like weird... old book that they used to you remember when they used to print books with many stories and just like what's going on in the town and then for every like Christmas and they would hand it out to all the townspeople and everybody would just read them in their houses. It was like the closest thing to like magazines at the time that you would get a subscription for. Kind of. I found one of those with the 1734 original story of Jack Spriggins and the Enchanted Bean. It is one of the hardest things to read because all the S's are shaped like F's, or most of them. And it's something that Julian was telling me they used to do in the 1700s. And I swear to God, you're just like, there was moments where I was like, I know this. I could read this fluidly. I don't have to think about it. And other times I was like, what the fuck is this word that just has an F? So it's a really hard read, but I got it, boiled it down. We'll go over it. It's fucking crazy. It makes no goddamn sense. I don't know who, actually I do know who wrote this. That guy's a weirdo. And we'll talk about it in a moment. So cheers. Everybody go pee and smoke cigarettes and stuff.
Hey, I'm Brando.
And I'm Owen.
And we're the hosts of the best podcast ever made, Banter and Such.
Each week we get together with the most interesting people that we know to talk about the things that we're just interested in.
Like movies.
Or video games.
Or movies.
Yes, or TV shows.
And sometimes movies.
Okay, Brando, yes, we do talk about movies quite a lot.
We do. We talk about movies all the time.
So anyways, check out Banter and Such anywhere you get your podcasts at.
Banter, ampersand, such.
Or banter, and then the word and then such.
Or just banter, and then it fills in the rest for you automatically, and you just click on it.
Either way, it's called Banter and Such.
Want to get into some BS with us?
All right, we ready for the second half?
I don't know, dude. Are you guys ready for the second half?
I'm just sitting at the edge of my seat.
We're rolling. All right, guys. So, found this story, 1734.
Whoa.
Old as fuck. It was about this guy named Jack. The perspective of the storyteller, I guess, is like a family member of Jack Spriggins, but it's supposed to be like a Christmas tale, kind of. And it's called Jack Spriggins and the Enchanted Bean. So... at first, I couldn't find the actual PDF. It was really hard to find, but I found an analysis of it, and this guy's like giving his own fun, spinny twist, whatever.
Oh, sounds lame, dude. Anybody who talks about fairy tales but not just tell the story exactly as it is super lame.
They're not only lame, self-indulgent, buddy. Who do you think you are to be this funny?
Right, shut up. Right, absolutely. Like, and especially if we were to do like a podcast about it.
Dude, imagine if those people got drunk too. The arrogance, the God. Utter arrogance.
This is the lowest of the low. Jesus.
God, Drew, you're fired, dude.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be low budget, bud. Okay. First red flag.
Are you?
Dude, that's high. I don't know if anyone else is as hard as I am, but holy shit. So, first red flag. It's about a man. He's a young man in this story, Jack. And this is the first written down version of anything that has to do with Jack and a beanstalk. So, Jack lives with his grandparents, and he's a young man. I don't know why, but yeah, what's up?
What happened to this story being 5,000 years old?
So, okay, the idea of it being 5,000 years old is there's an oral idea of Jack and the Beanstalk
okay. That
is 5,000 years old that's been told in, from all these different places. They can track this kind of story orally being around for about 5,000 years. That was the last time they saw a group of people who ever kind of like had a story about Jack, a young boy or a trickster and a beanstalk. Not necessarily the defeating of the giant. There's all these different variables that come into play. But that story orally has been around for that long.
Gotcha.
This is the first written down version of anything similar.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think it's because of the time. There's so many weird things. So he lives with his grandma. His grandma and him are a little bit too close. They sleep in the same bed. He's a young man. They sleep in the same bed. Why doesn't she sleep in the bed with grandpa? Don't know. There's two beds clearly because grandpa's not sleeping in that bed. And then on top of it, she talks about this magic bean she has. But it's like, she's like, it's my magic bean and it's going to bring you a lot of riches. And if you can get my bean, it'll bring you money, wealth, but you can't have it yet because I'm scared you'll leave me if I give you my bean. And I'm like, dude, don't say it like that. What's your problem? And so there's this whole thing about like, how like she like gets mad at him for a second. It's a really weird story. It just jumps around. Like she's mad at him, but then she's like, oh, I would never be mad at you. I love you, Jack. You're my baby boy. I love you. And you know what? We're so close. I'm going to tell you about my bean. And she tells him that it exists and it's hidden somewhere. And then Jack just starts digging in ash the next day. No reason. And he finds the bean. And then he plants it. And the bean immediately becomes this beanstalk. And then Jack's grandmother goes apeshit. And I don't know if she's mad that the bean grew. I also didn't really understand this part that much. But I guess when the beanstalk grows, it cuts him a little bit. And he's like, Grandma, I'm bleeding. And she's like, you stole my fucking bean. And she tries to kill him. And he's like, whoa, Grandma, what's going on? So he runs up the beanstalk and she chases after him, falls, and an hour has passed. And all of a sudden, she turns into a toad and hops away into some stranger's basement. Never talk about her again. And that's all the information they gave on that beginning, too. So now Jack's just climbing a beanstalk. And he's, like, going up. And apparently, this beanstalk is so tall that at certain heights, people have built these leaves, entire cities. So there's just, like, little, like, communities as you climb up this beanstalk, living on it. And, on one of them, there's a fucking bar. So Jack goes into the bar, and he's like, hey, can I get a drink? And they're like, yeah, let's get you a drink. He's like, can I get food? What kind of food do you have? And the guy goes, it's the most L.A. Persian thing I've ever heard. I have every food you could ever imagine. I have all of it. Food? I have it. You name your food. I'll tell you. I have everything. So this guy's like, yeah, can I have some beans? He's like, oh, if you came here last week, I had the best beans, but I don't have them anymore. He's like, all right, well, can you get me some, like, chicken? He's like, my chicken comes in on Friday. So, like, if you stay 2 days, you can have chicken. And he's like, all right, what about, like, beef? He's like, you know beef. And Jack is like, yo, what the fuck, dude? What do you have? And he's like, I have nothing, really. I have beer. And he's like, all right, dude, whatever. Give me another beer. So Jack grabs his beer, starts drinking it, and he goes to bed hungry. Now, when Jack goes to sleep,
does that mean he leaves the bar, goes back down the beanstalk, goes
to sleep? He lives, the bar has like a room in the back or something.
He sleeps on the beanstalk that night.
I think he's in the bar. Yeah.
Interesting. So in this version of the story, he doesn't need to go to sleep hungry for the beanstalk to appear.
No, actually, the beanstalk appeared, cut him, and then made his grandma go crazy and then turn into a toad. It's
That's
really
what it seems
weird.
Like on this version. Okay. Yeah. Why is this not the dominant version?
Because it was part of like a weird Christmas one-off like magazine thing, and it makes actually no fucking sense.
Gotcha.
It makes zero sense.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And so Jack's in this bar bedroom or something. I think that's where he is because he says he just...
Like
an inn. That's what I'm thinking too,
right.
Like an inn.
Okay, yeah. That's old school.
Yeah.
Lodging. Okay. So yeah. he sleeps at the bar.
Also, I think that was particularly common maybe in the 1700s.
Oh, for right? sure. The restaurant, you know, it's kind of like the OG bed and breakfast, except for like it had a tavern.
Yeah. Or yeah. It was a tavern.
It was a tavern. Yeah, yeah. Right. With some rooms to sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
It also wasn't that weird to share a bed at that point in history.
Yeah. But why are you sharing a bed when your grandma and only your grandma and your grandpa has his own bed? That's what I don't understand.
Right, they have a special connection.
Dude, I swear to God, I'm gonna put this PDF up for everybody to be able to read this.
I'd love to see
this. But I want you to read it personally.
I will.
Have you ever read the Book of Mormon, the actual Book of Mormon?
I've thumbed through it. I mean, I've had a couple of sisters in my life.
So I had a couple sisters. I didn't know this. They think the people who are black, for a long time, they didn't even accept them in the church. I think it was in the 70s that they took that back and started letting black people in the Church of Mormon. But they thought... You were marked with sin, and that they had to like rehabilitate you to get you to the planet with Jesus Christ. Like you were like the chosen and forsaken people, and we have to like fix you, right?
Well, let's
and,
get back to the more realistic story where he's sleeping in the.
Hold on, real quick though. These it'll tie in. So Mormon sisters were looking at me, and they're like, "That's some chocolate love." And they would show up at my dad's house almost like. I think twice a week trying to convince me to join the church because I entertained it a little. And I said, if you give me a book and let me read through it, I'll consider it. Next day, they gave me a Book of Mormon and I've had it forever. And I started thumbing through it. In the beginning of it, there's this weird way of wording where the word white is just too apparent. It's like the white goodness and the white light with the white fucking salvation. It was just they used white in the weirdest ways and too many times. In Jack Spriggins and the Enchanted Bean, the way the grandmother and Jack's relationship is talked about is hyper-sexualized in this way because they don't do this in the rest of the story. And it's just like, it's just so gross. You can tell there's tension between him and his grandmother just in the way they describe their love for each other. It's not... normal. I swear, if this is normal, dude, I get why I watch a lot of stepsister porn. It all makes sense all of a sudden. But if it's not normal, I'm still a pervert. And this is a really gross story. And so anyways, he's in the bar, fucking passing out like a drunk. And he like, I don't know if it's a dream or if he's like transported there. It's mentioned kind of like a dream. But this like lady fairy thing comes up to him and like gives him this like five wishes or some shit. Like she gives him a ring and five wishes. And she goes, you can have whatever five wishes you want. And the first thing he goes is like, I want a beautiful lady. I want us to be like fucking naked. And then I want us to have really nice clothes. And so like now they're just naked for a second. And he's like, sick. Now I want really nice clothes. And like really nice clothes. One other thing. And then his last wish is I want to sleep with this lady, and it immediately happened. They're just in a bed and they're fucking. And after
in this Christmas story,
okay. it's so weird.
Sounds he's amazing.
Like, he has five wishes, and they all are based around this. Oh yeah, yeah. Like fucking page 42. I had to sift through 42 pages of this weird tabloid from 1734. It was so gay. And there's no comics, bro. It's just bad words. Like good words, I mean regular words, but they're terrible because all the S's are F's and I fucking hated reading it. But so they're fucking and then it's, oh God, this is where it gets really hard because so much happens and it's in old English and you're like, I don't really understand it. But like he like fucking he gets these two ring or a ring for him and his wife. And if he turns it one way facing north, everything he wants like appears, but if he tasted the rock, I swear to God, dude, no, yeah.
This is starting to take like it's like the TV show Weeds. It's starting to get to a point where this is going so many directions. Mm.
And they don't like give lengthy, detailed like explanations for how it got to there. It just goes all of a sudden he has a ring. All of a sudden, if you turn the ring north, you have everything you want. And if you turn it south, you fucking, I don't know, like you cause havoc or you're protected and you're given a veil of protection or some weird shit. And it makes no sense. So then he's living happy as this rich man with this ring.
But just in this bar.
I think he's like, he has a kingdom now. They don't really specify.
Hold up. Can we just get here real quick? He climbs up the beanstalk. He gets sliced on the way up the beanstalk. His grandmother turns into a toad. He ends up at the bar, has a couple of drinks. They don't have any food to back up the drinks. He goes to bed hungry. He wakes up and there's a woman. Is that what's happened?
It's like a sex slave woman. It's okay, really weird.
Okay, a woman shows up with like, wishes, five wishes. He gets naked. He gets dressed. Couple other things. They have sex.
Not with this lady, with another princess. This lady comes back in the story. Or no, fairy, whatever she is. He has a princess. Jack gets a princess because Jack is the protagonist.
Just all in like what, one paragraph this happens?
This happens in the matter of like 2 pages, but like all of that happens in 2 pages.
Wow.
Dude, it makes, when you read this, you'll understand why I had such difficulty deciphering.
So he's still on the beanstalk with a kingdom on the beanstalk.
I think the kingdom is in the beanstalk. They don't really talk about the beanstalk after him climbing up into the bar. But they don't say that he ever left it either. They just say it just appears because that's the nature of magic. And everyone just gets that. So that's how it happens. Okay. And you're just okay, I guess everyone was like on this tip.
So he's got a princess and he's got a kingdom.
And he lives in a kingdom or some shit like that. And then this the fairy, the sex slave fairy, comes to him and goes, there's an ogre who has a house. You have to go to the ogre's house and he's going to treat you real dope for like 3 days. And then after 3 days, he's going to become a raging piece of shit. Just remember, if you keep your ring pointed north, you'll be fine. But if you turn it south, then you'll have all your desires, but also you'll die or some shit, or like some terrible thing will happen to you. And so Jack is like, all right, I'll go. And it's so weird because it's like, it doesn't explain a severity of importance or like any importance at all for him to meet the ogre. It just says, you got to go do this. And Jack's like, whatever, sure. And he goes to the ogre's house and the ogre's like, what's up? And we had a conversation last week where I got really, really drunk, and then I was like, we're so full of hubris. You guys think the giant's giant, but really he's normal size and we're tiny. And I listened to that, and I sounded like a fucking idiot until I read this story. And then I found out the ogre was giant until they start hanging out, and then everything becomes the same size as what Jack's used to, including the ogre. Just all of a sudden.
Do you feel vindicated?
Not only do I feel vindicated, I feel confused.
Okay.
Am I an oracle or like a prophet who sees in the future? Or am I just lucky?
Wow.
Every time.
Okay. So he's homing up with this ogre at a similar size.
Mm-hmm.
And also—
Everything shrinks.
Do you think this is the first reference to shit gone south? Because like that becomes a regular phrase in modern society where it's like, oh, this is going south.
No, I think south has always been down.
Right.
And we always have looked at down as bad, up as good, just right. Naturally.
Just humans. Is what it is. Okay.
Yeah. Because
everything's shit at the bottom of the beanstalk. You go north, you know, that's where it's at.
That was low-key the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. Yeah. Everything's south once you get to the bottom of the beanstalk, baby.
Okay.
He's in this kingdom with the ogre. Everything becomes normal size. They're hanging out for 3 days. It's dope. Living la vida loca.
Okay.
The ogre falls in love with Jack's princess.
Oh, gosh.
And goes, you know what? She's going to be mine no matter what happens, which is very similar to Beauty and the Beast.
It's heartbreaking.
I don't know if it's heartbreaking. I don't really feel bad for him. Yeah. Well, I mean, apparently for some people, it never is there, right? Apparently for some people, love should be free. Right? And there shouldn't be any tied down thing. And the ogre should have just been able to come to an agreement with the princess separately about fucking, and it shouldn't have been an issue. I think that separates this nuanced, monogamistic kind of love that you can have. But I also think it's fair to not have that if you don't want that.
Well, like, if you're operating at a high level, you got to have an agreement in place, right? Presumably.
Yeah, always.
Like, once you have your own kingdom and you've got a princess, presumably you guys look at each other and say, hey, one of the greatest things in existence is being able to enjoy the fruits of other people's action. It's just called the Clinton, you know, maneuver.
Yeah, but also then you get people like Lyndon B. Johnson who fucking, even though his wife cheated on him, he fucking stood with her because he was a ride or die nigga and he believed in.
I'm not saying that there's not other colors that you can wear, but when you're at that high level, you have to come up with some agreement. It's like the whole thing about Bill and Melinda breaking up because Bill was like flirting with somebody. I'm like, y'all,
Bill
are the most powerful people.
Flirting.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. He could. I said flirting as a placeholder for anything.
Okay.
Y'all are some of the richest people in the world. You don't have an agreement in place so you can enjoy good life?
No.
It's not even about the prenup, man.
No, Josh, I think this is
it's about the prenup.
No. That was beautiful. Josh.
So anyway,
wait,
I'm sorry, no, you go ahead.
No, what were you going to say? Because
I was gonna say, basically, so this ogre Monica Lewinsky would see the princess, and so like...
You can't use Monica Lewinsky as a verb, bro.
Yes, you can. Well,
so anyways, this happened within the 3 days? Cause
at the end of the 3 days.
Okay, great, because the ogre like goes crazy at the end of 3 days, apparently, right?
Which is what the fairy told him. And so I didn't... Okay. There wasn't a reason why, and they don't explain the importance of why... So that's maybe the first instance of importance... It gets weirder, but
the thing that you can't ignore, and I'm so sorry to interject again, but the thing that I cannot get over right now is I'm thinking, he fucked the fairy and then got the princess.
He didn't. He never fucked the fairy.
Oh, he never fucked the fairy.
The princess is the girl he wished up with one of his five wishes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, so but she was a true... sex slave, though. It was weird. Like, they mentioned her as, like, this fucking, but, like, they didn't fuck.
I'm seeing like a weird relationship. Maybe this princess in the newer story is the heart.
Trifling ass hoes.
I don't know.
Always snitching on niggas like us just trying to make a humble living for ourselves, bro.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, that's actually a great way to look at it. I don't know, though, because the princess is loyal to Jack. The harp wasn't. The harp was loyal to the giant.
Yeah, but we know the harp switches loyalties pretty quickly.
Also. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, I guess we'll find out. No, not even that. Now that we're in the after part where we're like reflecting on a bunch of shit, I think it's fair to bring this up. There is a version of this story. I don't know who's the direct author because there's a lot of versions, but there is a version which I thought was very interesting where the harp is sad and has been theoretically kidnapped. And Jack is rescuing the harp, separate from Henry Talbert, where it was his dad's harp. This is just a harp he doesn't know, but the harp confides in Jack when he's in the giant's house saying, like, I'm sad. I fucking hate my life here. And Jack's like, I got you. And so Jack grabs the harp, and they're sneaking out, and this is what gives him away. He also, in this version, he only goes up two times. He takes the hen, too, and the hen cackles when they get through the door on accident, and that wakes up the giant. So Jack's actually saving the harp, but gets screwed by the stealing of the hen. And that's its own separate version.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a lot of room for an idea of like the harp might not have always been the snitch ass bitch. So if the harp wasn't always the snitch ass bitch who switches alliances, maybe theoretically the harp is the princess. Like in that version. The harp is the damsel in distress.
Okay, so we've got these 3 days. They're homing up.
Kicking it, third day, okay. Giant's like, she got a fat ass. I want her to be mine. I will do anything. I literally will do absolutely anything. So Jack goes to sleep, him and his wife.
Whoa.
Fairy comes back. She goes, hey, this guy is going to take every single one of your servants and all the people who worked for you, and he's going to turn us all into food. He's going to kidnap us and eat us all. Okay. And that's the ogre's plan. That's the actual ogre's plan, and she's letting Jack know. So Jack, like, goes into this room to find them, or he turns his rock south first because now he's like, hoes are trifling. I'm about to fit Captain Planet, this motherfucker. So he turns his ring south, and I never actually figured this out, but his wife, like, turns into, like, a basilisk, and she's, like, slithering around, and she's like, gonna kill him or something, but ends up eating the ogre while Jack saves all his... They're specifically virgins. They're his servants, but they're virgins.
So they did have a deal.
And so... But no, because they're virgins. He didn't never fuck them. They worked for him for years.
Yeah, but you don't keep somebody a virgin for no reason.
Yeah, you don't keep virgins.
Right. No, exactly. You don't keep virgins unless you got plans.
For your yeah, but you just... Okay, I'm with you. You know what I mean? I'm with you, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly why you keep virgins, because when things go south, like they just did on his ring,
you've got a
backup plan.
Look, dude. I was a virgin once, bro. And I'm going to tell you right now, as far as rookies go, I definitely killed it rookie of the year, I think. Yeah. My first sexual experience.
Really, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because I was also, it was like a prom night. Oh, I was the younger one. I was the one a year younger.
Was she also a virgin?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You don't remember. Okay.
I don't remember.
That's a big detail.
That's a huge detail. I don't know. I don't think she was.
Yeah.
No. I know, right? No, I don't know. I do remember that she really, really, really wanted to bang, and it didn't seem... There was definitely no blood. And so I don't think...
There's not always blood.
That's, exactly. That's kind of a
fairy tale in itself.
Well, I mean, you should break it so many different ways, which is this so wild. Girls' vaginas are intense, dude.
Yeah, but that's, this is interesting that you don't know if she was a virgin, but when you lost it, you were on.
Oh, dude, five times. I literally, five times.
That's complete bullshit.
Five times.
That is
now, that keep is in mind. Keep in mind.
Complete bullshit.
Up until this point, I was...
What he meant is five strokes.
No, no. No, five times. Now, I will say the first, like, maybe two times, it was like, man, 5 minutes.
This is bullshit.
Five times. Five times. Broke a gummy bear jar in her kitchen. Five times.
So is this... So how many versions of this story is there? Just like
1,000, apparently. There's 1,000 virgins in this story.
Okay,
and he saves 1,000 virgins.
I'm ready to transport to a more realistic territory. Let's go back with to Jack the fairy tale.
Jack's brigands. He fucking saves 1,000 virgins. Now, this is the second, I think, the most important part of him meeting the ogre. I don't know if the fairy had this plan when she had him go over here, but there's apparently like 1,000 soldiers on a lower level of this kingdom, I guess, and they're all kidnapped too. And when he saves the virgins, they're like, what about the knights? You got to go save the knights. And there's no mentions of the knights before this. I don't know why they're there. I don't know how they got there. But he's just like, they're like, go save the knights. So he goes to the lower level, saves all 1,000 of these knights. And then they leave the castle. And Jack is like given the status of like, what was the name of it? He was the Grand Master of the Universe, or it was like something that intense. He'd come to at this point being the Grand Master of the Universe, and the fairy explains to him how all of these servants and all of these people were kept under a spell by his grandmother, who was this evil lady. So in Jack having gone up the beanstalk and like saving the day and getting rid of his grandma out of the picture and taking care of the ogre, he literally had fulfilled the prophecy of becoming Grand Master of the Universe.
Wow.
And this is all in this random pamphlet. That's like maybe 6 pages of Old English where Jack fucking saves the day.
So he grabs the virgins, he grabs the knights, and takes them back to Earth?
No, I don't know where they go. They just make it out of the ogre's kingdom and then live happily ever after with SSSFs, and the story is done.
That's really interesting. Hey, just to quickly go back to the kind of more popular iteration of the story, he's got his harp, the ogre dies, the giant dies.
I'm not talking about Joseph Jacob's version where he gets
I'm talking about the traditional version, the version that we were just talking about before this kind of crazy.
When
the giant falls, what happens after that? Like, I feel like I don't, was that, does the story just end there?
Yeah, dude, it's super annoying. Oh, so the biggest issue with Jack and the Beanstalk as a story in all versions of it is the Beanstalk part is such a limited version of the story. The story really starts once Jack climbs the Beanstalk.
Okay.
So it's more like of a vessel to get him to that other world. And this is another thing that has been brought up when I was doing the research of the history of it. A ladder to heaven is a theme that is thrown all around a bunch of stories. This idea of being able to climb to heaven is a huge, big thing. why it's a beanstalk that can grow that high and not some other kind of tree with a bunch of branches, no fucking clue. I don't understand why it's specifically a beanstalk. Now, there is this one argument that I wanted to bring up last week. We were making all of these jokes about the beanstalk being a fucking cock. Me and Julian both read this. We think it's a stretch. I'm curious what you guys think about this. The psychoanalyst, Bruno Bettelheim, who wrote extensively about the symbolic function of fairy tales as psychological paradigms, reads Jack and the Beanstalk as a depiction of the struggle to reach social and sexual maturity, specifically to assert adult masculine sexuality. He emphasizes the obvious phallic symbolism of the beanstalk growing in the night and links this to childish anxiety about masturbation. In this somewhat reductive interpretation, all is safely resolved within the confines of the story. In cutting down the beanstalk, Jack relinquishes his belief in the magic power of the phallus as the means for gaining him all the good things in life. As the story ends, Jack is ready to give up phallic and Oedipal fantasies. Oh, I didn't even ever recognize that. I didn't realize there was this Oedipus like conflict going on that this guy sees, and instead tries to live in reality, happily ever after of sorts.
Whoa.
Bullshit. I call absolute bullshit.
I don't know what's more creative, the whole story or that interpretation.
Dude, honestly, because looking back on it, when I read that, I'm just like, this sounds like a guy who obsesses over dicks and child masturbation.
He's totally projecting all of his insecurities onto this story.
Thank you. That's right. What I was like, this is a stretch. Like, to get to this understanding is such a fucking stretch.
And I'm not covering up any of my insecurities by downing his insecurities, because it's not like I relate to his insecurities at all.
I masturbate 8, 9... Yeah, so I get it, dude, is what I'm saying. Is I get it, but also at the same time, I would never put that evil on anybody else's story.
Wow. Hey, can you tell me what a basilisk is?
Basilisk is like a giant snake. Have you ever seen Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets?
That's what I visualized.
That's a basilisk. So it's like an anaconda.
Is that like an actual word?
Yeah, basilisk, I think it is.
That's like what they called it in the books in Harry Potter, right?
Well, right. That's what it is a basilisk.
I've never been too deep in that, in the sci-fi world. Is that like sci-fi stuff or is it like mythology stuff?
It's European bestiaries and legends. It's a legendary reptile reputed to be the serpent king who can cause death with a single glance. So, which is why Harry Potter can't look at it, and he has that sword, and he would use the sword as a reflection because everybody who saw it became petrified.
Right.
Which
right.
is like the big part of that. I didn't even realize how deep Harry Potter, or like how true to the origin of a basilisk Harry Potter represented. So yeah, wow. That's what it does. And it's just like a big ass anaconda with fucking religious properties, right? So let's go ahead and fucking, how, that was so rude, dude.
Wow. Yeah, but man, I'm like totally wrapped up in the story. I cannot wait to read some of the source material. If you could just link it in this podcast episode, I'm going to eat this stuff up.
That's what I'm doing. I'm going to link all of the pages that I looked at, but I'll also link my notes. It's going to be a little messy, but you'll get an idea of it. Now, before we do end it, the last thing I do want to kind of talk about is when we get to the point, like, why was this story written? What was going on around the world? Why is this story the way it is? And we talked about it briefly in the last episode too. Somebody brought it up. It was either you or Owen, Josh. The class controversy. Like, what is going on in this story? What's happening? There's many different ideas of it. In the most normal understanding iterations, it's a coming-of-age story of the young trickster who is, like, trying to get one past life and then has this, like, intense adventure. And it has to do with his, like, immature tendencies to steal things. And then he goes through this whole experience, has a life-or-death moment, and then after that goes away from it going, you know what? I'm just going to grow up and deal with life. And stop trying to cut corners. That's kind of like what I got from it reading it the first time. And like, that's where I was looking at it. But you guys mentioned a class controversy. And there's this guy named Ched Myers. Now, Ched Myers said in his discourse, Jack and the Beanstalk, a political reading of an old wise folktale. he delves into the social and cultural correlation mentioned earlier. Jack's representation of the downtrodden poor and the giant's representation of the aristocracy in pre-20th century England. According to Myers, the beanstalk symbolized the impossible bridge between two completely different worlds and where powerful rich giants could eat three calves. So remember when we talked about how the giant came in there, he had three calves on his side, but he was like, I smell like an Englishman. It's like, you can be that. You could have three calves and still be like, oh, well, I want delicacies, right? Ate three calves for breakfast, and where poor single mother families were forced to sell their only cow to stay alive. Myers argued that the poor saw the aristocracy as the reason for their condition. Surely Jack thought of his dear cow Milky White when he saw the giant's breakfast. When they were hanging there, he probably was like, man, you eat my livelihood. No, not even that. More like the thing I had to sell to save my family. You just got three around your hip and you're going to eat no fucks given because that's what you can do.
And fall asleep while you say how much
you count your fucking money and go, I'm so fucking rich, right? And so Jack's first escapade into the land of the giants shows the desires of his heart, the gold. Here we see the beginning of Jack's bittersweet transition from oppressed, and this is where I thought this was deeper than what we talked about, from the oppressed to oppressor. With each reoccurring venture up the bean sprout, Jack's appetite grows, which is why it's important to specify that the third time he goes up, they already had the hen that laid eggs.
You can never have enough money, man.
You can never. And especially once you get the never-ending swords. It's not about getting the immediate gains, because you would get rid of anybody who's poor who gets money really quickly, doesn't know how to use that money. Of course, they're going to spend it poorly and then become broke again. Now, what happens when you create that source of income that is consistent and a lot, but you still don't have the education of managing money like that? You might get greedy and put yourself in positions forcefully, like where he starved himself, just in the idea of like, maybe I can recreate that money. It's like this constant need for more, even once you've hit infinite and you just keep going for it because you come from a poor background.
I get it.
During his next trip, Jack steals a source of unlimited wealth that's still not enough. Meyer underlines the root of Jack's problem. Money is a principality which preys on poor and rich alike, which is why true social change requires personal as well as political transformation. And this is a wild understanding considering we're in this weird place in time where our poor are better off than poor people 500 years ago. Frankly, even 150 years ago, the modern poor person has some cell phone with Bluetooth and Wi-Fi accessibility and can pay $60 to have access to the same amount of information that any one of us with an iPhone theoretically has.
Well, at the same time, the gap has never been bigger.
Never been bigger.
Right. So, yeah. No, it's interesting that way.
Josh, real quick, before you go into this point, is it okay for me to bring up that you were at one point politically, and still are, but politically involved and got to actually see this separation firsthand and like really talk to the people who were affected by this separation firsthand? And in a place like Nashville, where it seems like we have so much fucking money, but like 5 minutes out of the city, it's just poverty.
Well, you also get to see a little microscopic version of that same thing taking place. It's kind of a look into a microscope and you can see the entire universe. Join politics and you can see the subtle play of socioeconomic divide play out in just the campaign itself. What it means to be an incumbent, what it means to have generational wealth. These are the people who are like the sons and daughters of people who have already been elected officials, already had power.
Can you define incumbent real quick?
Somebody who's already been elected to that office previously. And one thing that I experienced was I was running against somebody whose grandfather was the governor, whose daddy was the senator, and then he became the U.S. representative.
And so, what does his other brother do?
Is the mayor.
Of the same state or
the exact same district, pretty much. And it just it's a little microcosm of the same struggle that we all experience. But I want to take this somewhere else, which is, isn't it also just the guy with the magic beans is just a good mentor who taught Jack how to have a fruitful piece of property? So you could look at it in this kind of crazy, complicated way. You can look at it as a phallus. You can look at it as a big class divide. Or you can just say, this person learned how to be efficient with their property. So pretend that...
Wait. The old guy learned how to be efficient, or Jack using the old guy's wisdom?
The old guy taught Jack how to just maximize yield. And so you could look at it as this giant beanstalk with all these crazy things that are happening on the beanstalk. Or you can just say, hey, they had this piece of property and they finally learned how to plant.
Would you say that if the...
And it's unlimited wealth, because farm is unlimited wealth,
but
if
Jack,
you know how to use it.
Yeah, but Jack and his mother both, or at least his mother in the beginning, didn't believe in this at all. And the only reason why these beans grew is because they were thrown out of the window willy-nilly.
Right, which is just sowing the seed for the first time.
And accidentally, though. So do you still get the same – I know you still receive the same benefits and it doesn't matter. Do you still receive the same like accolades? Do you still receive the same kind of like – credit of having understood and learned how to do this? Or was this just a fluke that happened to work and then you just kept digging deeper into it, and it's just one of those experiences where someone had the luck factor at the beginning and was able to maximize on the luck factor rather than maximize on an understanding, which maybe the old man was trying to give him? Why did the old man give him the beans? Why is it not always an old man that he doesn't know? In a bunch of different versions. Why is it just this like standalone character whose only interaction is the transaction of the beans for the cow? And why does he disappear and like he's never brought up again?
This is why I think this supports my theory that the old man was just an experienced farmer who no longer needed his great knowledge to make wealth, because he'd already kind of had a nice nest egg for himself, right? So this person was passing on this kind of old knowledge onto the young next generation of someone who is coming of age. So that's why it's an old guy going to someone who's just now becoming a man. So
why in Jack and the Beanstalk is that relationship so brief and not like expanded upon? Like, this sounds like a classic Dumbledore Harry Potter apprentice to master. Right. Relationship,
uh-huh.
But they don't have the same kind of bond that almost every single time this instance is talked about. There's that like familiarity bond. This was a stranger.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think that there's this song by Billy Currington that is about da 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 da. You know that song, like "Buddy, I Like Beer." You know, it's like God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
Yeah.
They just met at the bar that one time, and he left him all that money. So we know it's possible.
It is possible. I wonder what inspires the, because it's like the same thing as the Jesus Christ kind of archetype, where you just do it for the sake of it being done. But usually in every instance of this, those people are given a little bit more time or credit in the story, and they're not in this story. In every instance, they never bring up that old guy ever again, or the person who gives him the beans ever again. They're more like a bridge that exists one time in the story.
Yeah, a good mentor wants you to graduate onto your next thing. I think maybe there's some holes in the theory, but it just seems like Jack just learned how to maximize the fruits of his own land. And the other side, which is he learned the strategy, which is sometimes you got to go to sleep hungry to be able to pick the fruits of your own.
I love that analogy. I love the idea of like going to sleep hungry, or the fact that hunger is part of the recipe
right.
for that success.
Totally.
I think it's very important, because in this instance, it's a literal hunger, and it gets to a point where it's forced in the Joseph Jacobs version and the versions that follow that one, where it's like you have to, for the third time at least, you have to force yourself to be hungry even though you have everything in front of you. It shows the drive of like an entrepreneur.
For sure it does. You want to go and wrap this thing up?
Yeah, but before we do our outro, last thing I want to cover, Drew. What's that? When we started this podcast, you almost took over this episode, you piece of shit, with your grand knowledge of this story. But you faltered at the end, like every great man does. You faltered in the last minute. But we went over and we covered everything, basically. Is there anything that you learned from this experience of this story that like stuck out to you and you really want to like just talk about for a quick second?
Well, I guess I'd have to say that, you know, and the amount of time that can be so quick that you toss a bean out the window and a stalk can just grow overnight. You know, sometimes if you're careful and you learn and you pay attention, you know, you can sometimes, I guess you can grow that wealth in almost the same quickness, but, you know, it still comes with that lesson being learned.
You sound like fucking Boomhauer from King of the Hill, dude. All right, on that note, we're going to go ahead and close this up. I do want to say the most interesting cliffhanger in this story is that, remember the riddle we talked about when the old man goes, well, how many beans makes five or something? And he goes, two in each hand, one in the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
In that version, he eats the fifth bean. He has three experiences with the beanstalk that grow. And in the Joseph Jacobs version, the way they ended off is, well, he ate that one bean and grew three. What happened to that last bean? Will it ever grow again? Or did Jack finishing this story finish the need for the beans? Are the beans magic because desire was present? Or do they work no matter what?
Okay.
Where's that last bean and will it ever grow? I think that's profound. When you get your success, when you get your nut, but then you fiendishly keep driving for it, but then you finally have like a fucking full ass life or death experience that makes you accept where you're at. That last bean of potential, where does it go? What happens to it?
Hopefully it goes on to the next generation.
And maybe that one bean sprouts the five that allows you to go ahead and pass this on.
Exactly.
Guys, Drew, is there anything else you want to say? Shut up, Drew. We're done with this fucking podcast.
Peace out!
Peace out, guys. I want to give a giant thank you to the Helios Network for putting this together. Even though Owen abandoned us and Brandon's never shown up for one of these episodes, I know they both live in our hearts forever. I want to also tell you guys thank you for being a part of this. Josh, Drew, myself. Now, I know Drew is always going to be here because Drew's a camera guy, but get ready to hear Josh in a new light if everything goes well. You're gonna be hearing a lot more of his fucking life story. And also, remember, drink responsibly. Read responsibly. Because if you don't, you might think you're smart enough to start your own.